14th, and this is the first meeting of the House Education Committee, and I do welcome each and every one of the members here and each of those who are guests and presenters today. As we begin our organizational component of this meeting, I would like to begin with the very important part, since we're going to be working together and hopefully just shoulder to shoulder, that we introduce each of ourselves and give us maybe a minute or two about you, your district, and your burning passion for education. I think I'll start down here with Representative Farr.
Oh, good. I get to be first. Well, I'm Representative Debbie Farr, and I represent House District 14, which is Northwest Eugene, Bethel Danabo, Santa Clara, and then north to Junction City and Cheshire, and also to the edge of Fern Ridge Reservoir, including the very small town of Alvador. I have been an outspoken public education advocate for over 20 years. I have three children that have gone to school in the Bethel School District. My youngest, Haley, is a senior at Willamette High School. I also worked for the district for 4 years, for 3 years in special education, and for 1 year in the Talented and Gifted program. I've served on a number of advisory boards and special committees, and right now I'm working on the ESP2 project at Bethel, which is the Bethel Exemplary Student Performance Project. We're in the process of writing our goals for the next 10 years. We've written our mission statement and our guiding principles, and I'm very excited to be part of that leadership team. Anyway, I am honored to be appointed to this committee, and I'm very excited about the work that we're about to do.
And Representative Farr, did I mention there was a time limit?
Sorry. Oh, no. I'm used to Donna's committee. We could take as long as we want.
I'm totally jesting with you. Representative Shields.
My name is Chip Shields. I represent Inner North Northeast Portland, and I'm a recent graduate of the Portland State University Master's in Social Work program. I've recently become interested in the King School PTA in North Northeast Portland, and I'm looking forward to learning as much as I can, particularly about K-12, which I'm only know the barest bit about, and I'm looking forward to working hard on this committee.
And we're going to help you with that as well. We're all going to be learning together. Representative Dolan.
Thank you, Chairman Flores, for the opportunity. I think when I introduce myself and talk about my background in education, it's one and the same. I started going to schools when I was 5, waited for the bell to ring, and did not leave them.
Time limit.
It is fun to be here to meet old friends, several, make new friends in education. I did teach for 10 years. I taught speech, American history, social studies, that sort of thing. At that time, I was the president of our local unit 3 times, negotiating team 5 times. I was a superintendent for 25 years, Montana, 12 in Oregon. I think I was an innovative educator. I'm not sure. After I talked to my colleagues, I set a bounty on dropouts. I thought it worked very well. I instituted incentive payments for everybody in the school. We had the mice on incentives. I think we need, this is an opportunity to re-examine education. Recently, I served on the school board for the new District 21 in North Washoe County. Apparently, the name is the big issue, Eagle Indians and Chenoweth Liddell School District. Math and science are a little important. But I look forward to serving on this committee. I look forward to finishing the last step in the educational process. Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Tomei.
Oh, thank you. I was expecting to be last. Thank you very much. I want to commend you for starting exactly on time. Thank you, thank you. What a great way to start. Thank you. I'm Carolyn Tomei. I'm state representative from Milwaukee and Southeast Portland, Fellwood, Westmoreland, Eastmoreland. And I've been an education advocate for many years. My children went through public schools. And I worked for Multnomah County Mental Health as a mental health consultant to special ed classrooms in schools throughout Multnomah County. And I was also a child development specialist for Portland Public Schools for, I think, about 10 years. So I'm very delighted to be here and serving with Madam Chair today and this session. I think it's going to be very exciting. I intend to learn a lot.
Representative Lim.
Madam Chair, it's my honor that serving with you, the esteemed members in this education committee. And when I was a senator, I'm John Lim anyway, House Representative. When I was a state senator, I served an education committee some time ago, so I'm somewhat familiar with it. And then I came to USA in 1966 to study. So as you may know, that education is very important. And my wife has been a high school teacher back in Korea for 8 years. And she also graduated from the Warner Pacific College when she came here. So we are big on education as everyone else. And as a small businessman, I set up the Mount Hood. This is self-propagation. I set up the Mount Hood Community College Scholarship Funds the last 10 years, and I will continue to do so as long as I can. And then it's good. Education is the most important issue and a very important committee in the House. The fact that the 59% total general funds going into the education, and we need to find out how could we fund the education at the same time, how do we spend the money effectively and efficiently for the students. So I'm deeply committed to work with you in the issue of education. I have several other burning issues, but I will talk to you later about that.
Thank you,
Madam Chair.
Representative Mark.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's a pleasure to be here on this committee. I represent House District 46. It's in the center of Portland. It has Warner Pacific College in it. I have portions of Portland Public Schools and David Douglas Schools District in my district. I have a little bit of education background. I hold a standard secondary credential from California, and I've also had a secondary credential in Oregon. I've taught in Deschutes in Washington County. And then I got crazy and went to Portland State, where I was director of the Institute on, not the Senior Adult Learning Center, which was a program that allowed seniors to come in and audit classes, and I also taught at Portland State. So it's a very great topic we've got here, and I also appreciate the timeliness of the committee meetings. Thank you.
Well, before we introduce our hardworking and treasured staff, I'll just give you a little bit about myself. I'm Linda Flores. I represent House District 51, which is Clackamas, Damascus, Loring, and Estacada, and a little bit of Southeast Portland, Multnomah County. I do have portions of six school districts in my House District. I have five children, two of whom did go to private school, three of whom did go to public school, and I have nine grandchildren, four of whom are now beginning their education journeys, hence my passion for education, and all of them are currently, those four are in public school. I think what you see is a vast, vast background of passions and interests, and I hope that we will all be working together, much like as we weave the tapestry together. We're going to have knots on the outside, but hopefully as we come through the process, we will not only edify each other, but we will be working together to craft a whole and sound reform package of public policy for education in the state of Oregon. I like to tell a few people, now I'm telling all of you, I think there is a new wind blowing for education in the state of Oregon. Now, I appreciate your comments in regarding to time, and there are two things that I will like to share with you, kind of the house rules, if you will, before we get to our official committee rules. I will be gaveling down promptly at our start time, and if you're not here, I would appreciate knowing in advance if you're unable to be here, and certainly I know how things get and hectic, and we're not going to condemn you, but I do have this jar, which leads me to from time to fine. Now, this is called the House Education Fund. I know there are some funds going out there for various efforts, but we will be funding K-12 one way or the other, and this is the beginning. So we can either allow it for the timeliness issue. We will certainly be allowing it for the acronym issue, which I'm told can only apply to those in the lobby and those in agencies and not to the public. But I frankly am telling you, the public is forewarned now. So if we, in the law offices, we would say, if you use an acronym, please give us the full definition, and then you may proceed to say that stands for blah, and then use blah further down the road. And if we forget, we're going to fund education here. So that would be the information I have to share with you. But please, Mr. Keller, would you introduce yourself and our staff?
How much is the fine going to be?
Well, since I get to set it, it could be pretty significant. But we'll start out at, I hate to say, as measly as 25 cents, so maybe four bits.
Makes too much noise, Madam Chair.
I think we should go paper.
Madam Chair, I would like to put seed money in the jar.
Okay.
We'll sort of in advance.
$1 per infraction and violation. Thank you very much, Representative Tomei. That's very, very astute.
I'm Jim Keller, your committee administrator, and Kelly Whiting is our committee assistant.
Well, thank you. I guess that's need to know basis. Okay. Then we will move further with the rules for the House Committee on Education. I believe you all had received a copy in advance, and I do believe you have copies in front of you.
If you'd entertain a motion, I would be more than happy to move adoption of the rules.
Well, I would entertain a motion to move adoption of the rules.
I second that motion.
I second. We don't need a second, but...
Thank you anyway.
Thank you. We need an educator telling us that.
And were there any questions in regard to the rules before we... Thank you. Kelly, would you call the roll?
Present?
No. Yes.
Present?
Present.
Yes.
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 Yes. That sounds like we have adopted the committee rules unanimously. Thank you very much. Mr. Keller?
Kelly?
Yes.
The representatives and answer present, could you ask them to respond again, please?
With a yes.
Yes.
I put us a roll call.
Yeah.
Well, I thought that's a call roll for the...
Okay.
Thank you. I'll get better at that.
We're all learning it.
Yes. So would you like to respond with a yes, Representative?
I would
give
a yes.
Yes.
Thank you.
Were you
kosher? Very good. And then that would be the rules are adopted. As we begin our journey, I would like to begin with a thought. This morning there was a wonderful presentation at an early meeting, and the closing quote was from former Secretary of Health, Education, and Welfare John Gardner, and it is, "Life is filled with golden opportunities carefully disguised as unresolved problems." Ladies and gentlemen, committee members, I would suggest that we have some unresolved problems, and as we now begin this journey to seek information and learn together, we've asked representatives from the Chalkboard Project to come forward and give us a presentation on what they have been working through and with and what they are working toward. Sue Heldick and Orsilia Zuniga Forbes.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the committee. Thank you for inviting us to be here today. We're very honored to be one of your first witnesses. And what we wanted to do is share a little bit of a progress report on the Chalkboard Project, let you know where we are and what's ahead for us in the next busy 2 months for us and for you. And then have Adam Davis, who's one of our partners, share what we've learned along the way. We've done a great deal of public opinion work in education over the last 10 months and thought you may find that helpful as you start to frame the issues. I'd like to just remind you that The Chalkboard Project is a new experiment, if you will. It is an initiative that the Oregon Foundation community has come together around and has offered up to see whether we can engage Oregonians in a dialogue about K-12 schools and arm them with the very best information, neutral information that we can find and offer up, and then look for common threads as we have that dialogue across the state and see where that brings us. You probably know public policy is an area where the foundation world hasn't played before, and that is because as private foundations, they cannot advocate for specific legislative proposals. They can bring information and research and bring that to you to inform your process, but it is not one where we're advocating a particular outcome or proposal at this point. We are independent and neutral, and the organization that was created really to host Chalkboard is called Foundations for a Better Oregon, and it consists of five independent foundations who serve on its board of directors and who manage the one and only project that it has, which is the Chalkboard Project. One of the five foundations is the Meyer Memorial Trust, which is based in the Portland area, and you may know has been very involved in the Small Schools Initiative in the state and other programs. And Orcelia is here today as a trustee of the Meyer Memorial Trust and also as a board member for Chalkboard. And I know she wants to share a few thoughts about how this project came to be.
Thank you, Sage. Chairman Flores, members of the committee, I'm Orcelia Suniga Forbes. Over a year ago, the five representatives of the five foundations that are based in Oregon came together to explore ways of greater collaboration. We do talk to each other, try to do checks on best practices, etc. But we were focusing in on how we might be able to help on any policy issues that the state might be facing. After several meetings, it became clear that education really was going to be the issue that we might be able to contribute to, and that the people of Oregon seemed ready to have someone looking more in depth at what was going on in K-12. So we also were well aware that in order to make any changes to bring about strong schools, it had to come from the citizens of Oregon. Well, if they're well informed and have the will, they will make the changes that are necessary to give us the strong educational system that we need. We came around to three factors that we thought we would research, and in fact the people of Oregon in our first survey also saw these as very important into a comprehensive school approach. And that was looking at the quality of the education, the accountability of the system, and certainly the fact of predictable, adequate funding. Those were all in the minds of Oregonians. In addition to myself, I'm as a Meyer representative, I'm pleased to represent the Collins Foundation that is based in Portland, the Ford Family Foundation, which is in Roseburg, the Jelwyn Foundation, which is in Klamath, and the Oregon Community Foundation, which is based in several parts of Oregon. The five organizations are diverse in many respects and have different priorities. However, one thing was clear. We are committed to Oregon, and we were making different grants in education, K through higher education, each of us. So we do have that commitment. We are independent and neutral conveners, but we do hold ourselves accountable in this respect to Oregonians. What we learn from citizens, we want to be able to bring forth. And what they are willing to support is what will be important in our efforts to have any findings that will make that can be brought forth to different groups. We are convinced that there will be information that would serve the foundations themselves. What I've advocated is that we ourselves take on funding pilot projects after we learn more about things. And there will be things that superintendents and principals and teachers and parents will be able to participate in. So aside from the legislative process, there will be additional information that will be useful to get this groundswell that will help our schools.
Commission, so I'm very pleased to be a part of, obviously, of Meyer and Help Oregon, but being part of the Foundations for Better Oregon has been very gratifying. A lot of challenges and opportunities, as you mentioned, ahead of us. Thank you.
Thanks, Rosalia. I'd like to give you a thumbnail sketch of our process so that you have an understanding of where we've been and where we're headed. And we officially kicked it off in March of last year, about 10 months ago. The first thing we did was look at broad-based public opinion research. So we did a survey of the state in April of 1,800 Oregonians. We divided the state into six regions, and we talked to 300 people in each of those regions. And Adam's going to share with you some of the top-line findings from that. It is, to our knowledge, the deepest public opinion poll ever done on the topic statewide, and it really did serve to point us in different directions as we underwent the progress of our work. The other thing that we've done is focus groups. We've done over 30 of them now, and we've done those with people who are really on the front lines. We started with teachers and principals and parents, and we did 12 of them across the state. And since then, we have done superintendents and students and school board members and parents of Hispanic children, parents of special needs children, parents who had their children in public school and now have their children in private school. We have tried to take a slice from every perspective we could find, and certainly we haven't touched them all, but we have now a very good knowledge base, I think, from those who are really seeing things firsthand. And we ask them really two questions. What are your top concerns around quality, accountability, and finance, and what have you seen work? Where are the best practices from your vantage point? We took that information and we fed it into the second part of our process, which has been a look at best practices in education. And we have worked with Echo Northwest, which is an Oregon-based research firm, and the University of Oregon to really do some broad-based searching for the very best models in those three areas. And in fact, we're publishing that research today on our website and bringing you this afternoon a copy of all of that. It's not light reading. It's over 400 pages. But what it showed us was there was a subset of proven practices and a very large set of promising ideas and practices. And then even another category, if you will, of innovative ideas where the research base isn't necessarily there, but they're seeing some good results from some of these models in different places. We looked within Oregon, we looked nationally, and we looked internationally. And in fact, Representative Farr Bethel was a place where we spent a lot of time looking, particularly at the reading program, as a best practice. You'll find that in our research reports. We also had those reports read by a committee of Oregon and national education experts. We went to Paul Hill at the University of Washington and Michael Kirst at Stanford, Bob Bend, who's an accountability expert, and we asked them to read the reports and critique them. So you'll see that they've been peer-reviewed and adjusted for what we learned from some of those great thinkers across the country. The third part of our process is sharing what we've learned, and we're just starting that. Some of you may be aware we did launch a public awareness campaign that was controversial. It was designed to get people talking, and I'm glad to tell you, pleased to tell you, that it's done that. It's excited passions all over the issues and has driven 400,000 people to our website. So we're getting a very good flavor every day of different viewpoints across the state. And the website has been a primary tool for us to communicate back with Oregonians. All of our research and our survey work is posted there. And when you come to the site, you can take a survey right there online, and you can see how some questions have different answers whether you're in Eastern Oregon or the coast. You can get a sense of what people are saying across the state. So if you haven't visited it, I encourage you to do that. It's a great resource. We've also tried to distill some of the research into easy tools for the public. We put out a list of the top 10 things you need to know about Oregon schools. We've tried to really simplify the information in the hopes that people might actually pick it up and read it and digest it and think about it. And we are about to launch probably the most ambitious part of that information sharing, which is our civic engagement process. And starting this Sunday in Beaverton, we will start the first of 20 forums across the state. And in those forums, we're asking Oregonians to walk through with us some different ideas and to give us some feedback. And in your packet, I just want to draw your attention to our citizen feedback guide, which is this book here. And there are over 35 ideas presented here. They're grouped in some key categories that we learned about as we asked in our poll of Oregonians what were their top concerns. And, for example, the question we asked specifically is, what are the top barriers to successful schools? And the number one barrier identified statewide was the lack of parental involvement. So you'll see the first section in this guide takes that on and talks a bit about parental involvement, presents some ideas, certainly not the universe of ideas. These are really to be viewed as discussion starters. We really want to frame the discussion a bit, but have people react and respond and point us in new directions we haven't considered. But what we're after is a robust dialogue with Oregonians across the state about parental involvement for this piece. There are five other topic areas in here. The fifth being a list in the back of a lot of different ideas we're looking at that we didn't have the time to flesh out in the guide. For people who participate in those forums, we're asking them to spend 2.5 to 3 hours with us, really walking through these issues, thinking about them, and talking with their neighbors about them. And so it will be very interesting to see, I think, the outcome from this process. What we're hoping is, as we go across the state, we're going to hear common threads. There are going to be some things that emerge and that lift from our process where we can see people coming together. That's, after all, what Chalkboard's really after, is a new vision for K-12, and we want to find those areas where we have agreement. We know there'll be others where we don't, and we want to hear about those too and understand what kind of process might we need to go through in the future around some of those issues where we're very divided. And so that's a bit of the civic engagement work. In your packet, you'll also see a schedule of where those forums are going to be. We start in Beaverton this weekend, and then next week we're in Albany and Astoria, and then I believe Eastern Oregon after that. How does this all wrap up? Well, we expect to be able to tell you our first findings by early March. We will have completed these 20 forums at that time, and we'll be able to share with you what we've heard. There'll still be a lot of activity going on, though, because in addition to those large forums, we're doing a lot of grassroots activity at the county level. We're working with the Rural Development Initiative, RDI. We have subcontracted with their staff across the state to help train volunteers to carry out these discussions at the local level. So we want to see them happening in rotaries and book clubs and places of local employment. We really want to have a broad reach with these materials, and we are asking anybody who goes through them to give us their feedback, either in the booklet that you see, which is a supplement in your materials, or online. All of this is available online for people to send our way. I think what might be most helpful now is to let Adam tell you a bit about what we learned in April and how that's guided some of our work.
I might add, excuse me just a moment, are there any questions at this point for Sue or Celia? Okay, Adam then.
Representative Flores, Chairman Flores and representatives, I just wanted to add that we want to make sure that we're in every single county in Oregon. I think it's important that we get feedback from, and so one way or another, we will be in every county.
Then I'll give you mine.
Good afternoon, everyone. It's a pleasure to be here, and I'm actually very excited to share these results with you. And I'm going to refer to this handout that's in your packet. If you can find it, it is a summary of the survey, and I must stress that it's the tip of the iceberg. You can imagine what a 20-minute questionnaire administered to 1,800 Oregonians delivers in terms of data. But that's what we did. And I want to, first of all, let me quickly make reference to the cover page here. It's this handout, everyone. This is right from the website, and this lists the different research projects that Chalkboard has undertaken. These are the focus groups that Sue was referring to, and at the very top you could see reference being made to the survey. So if you turn into that, the first page, the bottom slide there, again, the fact that we were able to do 300 interviews in six regions is something very unusual, because what often happens in the state of Oregon is that as a researcher, I can give valid and statistically reliable information and feel real good about it for the highly populated areas of the state. But what often happens is those areas with less population, you just don't have enough interviews to say with a great degree of statistical reliability what's cooking out there. So this is that commitment that Orsilia is referencing, is that there's a real commitment to reach to all areas of Oregon and understand the attitudes, but importantly to understand the motivations that underlie those attitudes. And that's why a lot of this focus group research was done, because it's so helpful to get to the underlying motivations behind these numbers that we're going to look at real quickly. I do want to stress something as you launch into this effort, Chairman Flores. This was an independent, nonpartisan undertaking. Our firm is independent. Our firm is nonpartisan. We work very hard to maintain that. The questionnaire was developed very carefully. We had, of course, looked at other research that was conducted by stakeholder groups, but what we want you to know is that in designing this questionnaire, we put things out before the public that, quite honestly, I don't think has been asked before. And that's important for you to know. I'm going to quickly review some of the key findings from the survey, and then if we have time, I'd like to just share with you maybe a couple things that just really jumped out at me from having conducted all these focus groups across the state of Oregon that you might find interesting as you move forward. And I must say now that, again, this is just the very tip, and there's so much more there. And as you move through your deliberations, if questions come up and you're wondering if there's maybe some public opinion research out there, either quantitative or qualitative, that might help you, I'm sure, consider us a resource. We're there for you. For sure, as any of you familiar with the work our firm has done on the values and beliefs, the 1992 study and the 2002 study, this is, you should consider it values and beliefs public education. That's how in-depth it is. So let me share with you very quickly some highlights. I'm on the next page here, and I think, you know, the headline clearly is that Oregonians want a K through 12 public education system that is among the very best or the very best in the nation. I mean, they have high expectations, and you can see those numbers in the bottom chart, where 57% say it should be among the very best in the country, and an additional 23% say that it should be the very best in the country. So those are the expectations. What is their perception of reality? Okay, their perception is that there's some work to be done. And it's different depending on how you ask the question. If you ask people about how the local schools are doing, you get one reading. If you ask them about how the state schools are doing, you get a different reading. So keep that in mind as you move through the session as well. Let's take a look at that top chart there, and you can see the difference. When you look at somewhat good or very good, you have less than a majority of Oregonians saying that they feel that schools across the state are doing somewhat or very good. It's a little better, though, when you ask them about their local schools, but still you have more than a third of the people saying something other than very good or somewhat good. And this is the value when you look at this project being a statewide project. Always keep in mind that attitudes regarding a lot of things do vary across the state, and here is just a little example of it. you can see that people in Eastern Oregon and Central Oregon feel more positive about what's going on in their local schools than people maybe in some of these other areas. You take a look at the Willamette Valley, the coast. There's your state total. See that way down at the bottom, that 62%? That compares to the 62% in the chart above it. But I wanted to give you a sense, and I just picked this as an example, that attitudes do vary across the state on a lot of these issues. The next chart is, in addition to educating students, let's put that aside for a moment. In addition to educating students, why else do we need good schools? Because if you're going to move an agenda forward, you have to know what door to walk people through. And for many people, it's just not about educating students. It's about other things as well. And we wanted to get a handle on what those other things are. And we see reference made. It's important because it means reduced crime and social problems in the future. It's important to because we need kids to know the basics, the ABCs of citizenship and civics. It's important because it keeps families in our community. It's important because it benefits the economy in the long run. It's a community center for our town or our neighborhood. And even improving residential property values was something we heard, and that people made the connection. Good public education system, good property values. And these do vary by district. It's fascinating. As you move across the state, some of these will be more important in some areas than others. The next chart is another communications issue, I think. It's because educators, I so often hear them talk about the benefits of education in terms of college prep, getting those kids ready for college. What's important to realize here is that you really need to acknowledge that it's not only about college prep, but it's also about getting students ready for the workplace. And you have a substantial number of Oregonians saying that it's about something else, too, and that's graduating students who have sufficient social skills that can function in society, at the workplace, these kinds of things. And so it's more than college prep. And we look at the question, what is most important for Oregon schools? They had to select one of those three. And it gives you an idea that you have Oregonians who consider things as important as college preparation. The next chart is one of my favorites. We gave people a long list of different skills and different topics, different courses. And we asked them not only how important they were, very important, somewhat important, not very important, but we added a fourth category beyond very important. This should be required for graduation. And there were two that just skyrocketed on the list. None of the other subjects in school got more than 50%, except these two, 69% and 63%. They value the basics, everyone. And we'll come back to that in a moment, because the definition of basics is evolving and has changed over time. But there's a real strong feeling on the part of Oregonians that it's about the basics. The basics come first. Those other things are important, but we better be convinced that our graduates are getting a good foundation in the basics. So when you add the 29% who said very important together with the 69% who said required, and Oregonians are an independent lot, if you give them, there's always going to be a percentage of Oregonians that will say, listen, required, forget it. You know, I don't buy that required stuff. But even in it, with that mindset on the part of a lot of Oregonians, you have 7 out of 10 Oregonians telling you that this should be required for graduation. Regional differences for priorities, just a quick look at this specific issue about closing the achievement gap. And there's some good validation here. You'd expect it a little higher in the Portland metro area, and it is higher in the Portland metro area in terms of being an urgent problem than, say, somewhere like Central Oregon or Eastern Oregon. You're looking at about 2 times the number of people more likely to say urgent in that area. The next chart is perceived obstacles. And, yes, you hear all about funding, and more funding. But I think one of the things we learned in this survey from Oregonians is that people see other things as important to the success of the schools. And I think they're looking for that. And anything that comes out of your efforts is an acknowledgement of that. And that being built in whatever the reform package is. Take a look at number one. Right up there with funding is not enough direct parental support. Not attracting, retaining highly qualified teachers. You could argue that that's connected to funding, but in a moment I'll share with you that there's more to that than just funding. Unfunded federal mandates. I think one of the surprises for us is that the public gets it. They do. I mean, it's been out there a lot in the media over the last few years. A lot of coverage given to unfunded mandates. And it's made an impression upon public opinion. We were surprised at how many people mentioned that in open-ended questions as a problem facing the school system. How many people rated it as something that really is a big obstacle to schools being a success. I think that surprised some of the folks and some of the professional educators that we're interacting with, too. And then central administration waste and efficiency, we'll talk about that, too. But really, these are very much flashing yellow lights because I would argue, just having spent hours and hours with people in focus groups, that just addressing any one of these, even any two of these, is not enough. There has to be, in their mind, a sense that you've recognized that this is more than a quick fix, that it's more than just one or two things that need to be addressed, that there are a lot of things that need to be looked at and looked at very seriously. You know, that bottom slide is not a surprise to any of you. Oregonians are basically split on the issue of whether schools need more money. A lot of Oregonians, if you look, if you consider the don't know, not sure folks, the unsure people, together with the margin of error, we're within a split on a big hunk of Oregonians feeling that no, bottom line is that schools need more money, and another half of Oregonians feeling that no, there's enough money out there. It's more a question of using that money better, or they're unsure. So that's where we are as a state. So you run people through this survey, and you ask them about the need for a project like Chalkboard. And the final page here is just an endorsement, a strong endorsement for what Chalkboard is doing. And, you know, you have a lot of skeptics out there, a lot of cynics out there, a lot of people feeling negative. And whenever I see anything above 50% these days for questions like this, I find it very encouraging. 6 out of 10 Oregonians, even more, saying Oregon's K-12 public education system needs to do more about quality, accountability, and finance. And Oregon needs a group of independent, nonpartisan organizations to convene to improve the state's K-12 education system. So we run them through. For some people, the interview took 30 to 40 minutes because they really got into it and they had a lot to say. And we asked at the very end, would you be willing to give us your name, email information, contact information to become part of this independent nonpartisan effort to improve K-12 education? I've done this over the last 25 years, a couple dozen times. I've never seen a response like this. 1 out of 3 people went, not only said yes, but gave us all their personal information. Of course, we assured them that we would treat it very, very confidentially, but they wanted to be part of the effort. And these are some of the people that are now serving as eyes and ears for us across the state of Oregon, kind of monitoring their area, giving us feedback, and some of them are even volunteering time. And you might ask, well, Adam, do you see anything demographically that is different about that 1 out of 3 people compared to everyone else? The interesting thing is no. They are a very representative cross-section of Oregonians. We looked at that 1 out of 3, and I think that's encouraging too. Real quickly, because I know time is precious here, do we have time, Representative? I wanted to share with you a couple of things that just really have, I think, struck all of us having done these focus groups. And let me share with you, as one client used to say, what would be the headlines? Well, there are a lot of headlines, but four that I kind of penciled in while this morning while preparing for this is this whole issue of stable and adequate funding. And I'll tell you, it wasn't once, it wasn't twice, it had to be many times where we heard from members of school boards and administrators that were so frustrated and said, listen, we understand about adequate, but at least give us stable. Stable funding is so important to us because if we don't have stable planning, how can we effectively, or stable financing, how can we do effective planning? Because we need to know what to count on, and the public is holding us accountable for doing good planning and delivering on that planning. And if we don't know from one moment to the next how much money we're going to have, that makes that very difficult. And the other issue, you know, you're talking about underlying motivations, is this whole issue of morale and just having that up and down and people just wondering from one month to the next or quarter to the next if the money is going to be there for this program that they've put a lot of time into, if it's even going to be there for the next quarter. So I wanted to give you that little nuance on that stable and adequate funding issue. Second is waste and inefficiency. I think the message we'd have for you there is that waste and inefficiency means different things to different people. For many people, I mean, I think where we automatically go is the fat, bloated central administration, right? You've all heard about it. We continue to hear about it in focus groups. When you probe people on that, it's more than salaries, it's more than benefits, it's more than too many bodies. We hear other examples of waste and inefficiency, and again, these are people's perceptions. This is what we're hearing, and I would say that again, this may not be reality, but we hear a lot of references to buildings, the way buildings are designed, the fancy buildings, the Taj Mahals that are built, the four-star restaurants that are put in for the kids. Of course, this is what I'm hearing. I'm sharing with you what I hear as examples of waste and inefficiency. It's more than just central administration. Purchasing systems, transportation systems, often referenced when we talk about waste and inefficiency. But there's another thing that's rolled into waste and inefficiency, which kind of caught me off guard, and that was waste and inefficiency is when you as a system are delivering things that you have no business delivering, in my opinion, is what the respondent is saying. In other words, I want you to deliver the basics and do a good job delivering the basics, and I look at all the other stuff that you're doing, the extracurricular activities, the other courses, the other course offerings, and all that. To me, that's not what you should be doing and concentrating on. Then they go and throw the waste and inefficiency card at you, and that is their definition of what waste and inefficiency is. It's a little nuanced there. But I think we have a tendency of jumping too quickly to just conclude that waste and inefficiency is all about central administration. It's more than that. Thirdly is teacher performance. People love teachers. We continue to see teachers at the very top of the list in terms of favorable and unfavorable ratings. If you just look at all the different institutions, organizations, and groups that my partners and I ask about. It's a different story for teachers' unions, quite honestly, but for teachers, they're at the top of the list. But, this is the big qualifier, they want good teachers. And there's a lot of frustration out there regarding teacher performance. And teachers teaching that have no business teaching, in these people's opinion, and how difficult it is to get those people out of the system. So I hear a lot of comments about hiring and firing, and I hear a lot of comments about promotion that should be based on merit and not on tenure. And I know that the system has changed, but that's fine. I'm just reporting to you what we hear in groups, you guys. And that is a real big issue. and it relates directly to quality, in their opinion. The final comment I would share with you relates to that basics chart, how important the basics are to people. And I think as many of you have served in the education sector, you've been part of the education sector, and a lot of educators hear a lot from, I don't want to call them special interest groups, but people who are strong advocates for extracurricular activities, the arts, the music, the sports, the athletics, foreign languages. I think the message that we got from this research is twofold. Yes, it's all well and fine, but in tough economic times, tough choices have to be made. And when those tough choices have to be made, you go to the basics. We want you to deliver on the basics. So keep that in mind. Very important to people. The other thing to keep in mind is this, and it's a little subtle, but it's not that people don't value those other things. They greatly value them. But a lot of people don't get the connection, if you look in the education research, about how important these things are to engage students so that they learn the basics. When we do focus groups, a lot of the time, people get that, but they have to be prompted on it. That they come into the room not seeing that connection. The connection makes a lot of sense to them, and many of them then refer back to their own personal experience. They go, yeah, you know, the only reason I stayed in high school was because of shop or because of drama or because of sports. But it's not there initially. What is there initially for them is that these are tough times in a lot of households in Oregon. They've made tough decisions in their personal budgets. They're expecting the public sector to do similarly, and priorities have to be set. And without any education, without any prompting, they're going to go basics on you. And my final comment, my final comment would be this, that the basics have changed over time. And part of the basics now is definitely computer education. And this is one to consider. And I can best phrase it this way, that helping students develop good values is part of a lot of Oregonians' definition of what basic education is. There's a lot of frustration, and when I say values, be careful there, because a lot of people jump to the religion and the spirituality and want to go down that road. We're not talking that. What Oregonians are telling us is that they're talking about work ethic, working cooperatively with other people, learning how to work independently, a sense of civility. These kinds of issues are part now of many Oregonians' definition of what basic education is all about. So on that one, I'll end it. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm enthralled. I'll have a question, and then certainly we'll begin the process here. Adam, jumping back to your comment on stable and adequate funding, you focused a little bit on the input you had regarding stable from boards and those involved in their local areas. Was there any sense of time frame that that they would set the table with stable in the legislative process, for instance, when the budgets are delivered for education so that they could rely upon those? Was there any information given to you that gave an indicator?
It's a very
there.
Good question, and I don't remember us getting to that detail.
Not from the focus groups, not at that level of detail, but you'll find in our research report some different ideas about how you might sync the legislative schedule with school district budgeting schedule, and there are some ideas in there that you might consider switching the calendars in which you convene to align better for school districts to do their budgeting, sort of give them budget figures in advance. So that's an idea that's in our literature to talk about as we go across the state.
I would follow up then with, in the event that would not be something that is doable, is there in the process of when the budget numbers are set and passed in the legislative cycle, would that relate to have an outlier effect for the schools. Mm-hmm. Beneficial effect, I guess.
Yes. Right.
We'll get there.
Okay.
Yes. We'll go Representative Vice Chair Dolan and then Vice Chair March, I think.
Yes. Madam Chairman, I would like to explore with Sue and Adam. You prefaced your remarks on adequate with the difficulty in defining that term. In your research, when you use the term adequate or something similar to that, what was the definition of adequate?
It was all over the map. All over the map. And for many people, it started actually with the last issue we discussed together, and that was what is there, I think the two issues that I saw brought up relative to that is, what is my definition of a good education, of a quality education, and then how I view waste and inefficiency. Depending on where an individual is relative to those two issues, I saw those being the primary motivators as to whether or not they even felt the schools had a money problem. You see, because you've got to jump almost into a subgroup of folks, of Oregonians, that roughly 50% who do believe it's a money problem. And if your question is what is adequate, it all depends on what they think is being done on the waste and inefficiency front and on what the kids are learning in school.
One follow-up, then. So would I be safe to say that adequate is not a term that we can use to define education funding because it is so broad-based and so... And would you answer yes to that so it gets on the record?
Enthusiastically, I answer yes.
Thank you. Adam, you've been a treat.
Uh-oh. What have I walked into here?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Adam, I'm sort of intrigued with waste and inefficiency versus the arts, music, and language shop issue. And I think there... It's a perception issue when you're polling, and as when I'm going door to door, anecdotally, the people that are talking about waste are not the people who have students in school. Mm-hmm. And I wondered if you did a correlation to students, people with children in school versus none.
A very good question, Representative March. Let me share with you this. There are very few differences between parents and non-parents on these issues. A lot fewer than I think a lot of people think. That being said, the major difference we see is that parents feel that their local schools are doing a better job than non-parents. If I had to point to one real difference, that would be the difference. And Representative March, there is some difference between how they view extracurricular activities, but it's not major. It is not major. But I think the general rule across the board would be that you have many parents, and it's the same proportions roughly as non-parents, feeling the way about these issues than what am I saying here? That parents and non-parents are feeling similarly about these issues, that they break in about the same proportions.
Madam Chair.
One moment. We're adding cell phones to the list. Just a note. You get a pass.
They have to contribute a dollar.
This may be a follow-up question to Representative March, but when you talk about extracurricular activities, do you think people include sports activities in with music and drama and speech and debate?
Everything other than the basics. Okay, then there are shades. I mean, there's some people that would rule out one or the other, but the real division is between the basics and what people perceive to be the non-basics.
Thank you.
Representative Flynn.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And the last page you presented, there's 61% agree Oregon needs a group of independent, nonpartisan organizations to convene, to to improve the state K-12 education system. How did you ask questions? What question did you ask and that came up to 61% of them? What was the question?
It would be an agree or disagree statement, and they would have a choice to agree strongly, agree somewhat, or disagree strongly, and of course to answer don't know, not sure. So we read them a close-ended statement, and they respond with a point on that scale. So we had 61% either agreeing somewhat or strongly with that statement, that Oregon needs a group of independent, nonpartisan organizations. So maybe, Representative Lynn, your question would be, well, what about the other 39%? And it would be a good question. And I think when you have an opportunity to talk about people, remember, we have a very cynical, very skeptical, very negative electorate out there. There's a lot of issue fatigue around this thing, and a lot of people say, you got to be kidding. One more group looking at education. Oh, we don't need that. We need action. I mean, there's a lot of different responses. So even with that climate, with that kind of number, we were very pleasantly surprised.
Okay, and the follow-up. Do you have any idea what kind of independent, non-partisan organizations? Any idea? Can you give us any suggestions? Are they talking about regardless of the public education system there, and the OEA, Oregon Education Association there, plus many other organizations there. Are they viewing this organization in a negative way? Are they including those organizations together, making it independent?
Again, a good question, and I want to make very clear that Oregonians, I think, would not include under the label independent organizations, professional education organizations and associations like OEA, COSA, and OSBA. Oregonians understand. Yeah, you wanted a fourth one?
We're back.
Okay. And OPU. But what they are saying, and don't get me wrong, this is not a commentary. This is not a commentary, everyone.
You don't get changed.
Absolutely. It's not a commentary on their image. We could talk about that perhaps at another time. But what Oregonians really want, and whenever we ask about what do they mean when we ask about independent nonpartisan, at the top of the list comes foundations and nonprofit organizations. And they really were captivated by the thought of five Oregon foundations, independent nonpartisan organizations coming together. And really, never before in the history of Oregon that we're aware of, and I think a real pioneering effort even nationwide, kind of putting aside their maybe different philosophies of giving, to recognize that this is a problem and agreeing to work together to do something about it.
Madam Chair, I think this is some kind of just a comment. This looks like to me a wake-up call for our state education system.
Representative Lim, I can't disagree with you, and that's, I guess that's kind of behind my thought that I shared earlier, is there is a new wind blowing for education in Oregon. Representative Dahlem.
My question, Adam, I'm sure that one of the statements that you made is that Oregonians are looking for action now, as opposed to adequate. Can you give me some sort of a definition of now?
That is a great question. All I can tell you is that there is an incredible frustration out there on the part of people that this problem continues. They want to see it resolved as quickly as possible. One of the things that we pick up, however, when we do all our research, and again we've been doing it for a long time, is that there isn't necessarily a lot of awareness and a lot of knowledge level about the ABCs of government. and about the ABCs of politics and how these things work, and that it's likely to take time. Bottom line is they want it to happen now, and now is now. They want this resolved, and there's a lot of frustration out there on the part of Oregonians, parents and non-parents. So now is now, Representative Allen. Now would be this week, today, if possible.
You need a place to live.
Are you adopting him?
Either that or marrying him.
That's
no, thank you.
That's thank you.
This is not enough. Okay.
Excuse me. I was way over
the edge.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Not to drum the basics question into the ground, but did you get a sense of history and social studies were also included in the basics?
When we asked about important subjects, important areas of study, history and social sciences did pretty darn well, but they're not considered to be reading, writing, and arithmetic. These are the things that allow you to excel at history and social studies, and people really elevate those higher. But Representative Shields, social sciences, history, very important, but there was probably a lot of importance placed on the sciences, which did very, very well. Computer education and things like this as well. So it'd be part of a big middle tier.
Thank you, Adam. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair. Representative Farr.
I have a question. In addition, you included speaking skills. And in the past, when people talk about basics, they didn't include speaking skills. Can you just speak briefly on that?
In terms of how
speaking skills,
using my speaking skills, how important speaking skills are to folks as far as a basic is concerned,
right? And is that lumped into one of the others? Would that be lumped into reading?
You're referring to which chart?
It's valued skills and subjects, and it includes strong reading, writing, and speaking skills.
And I think that's a very good point, Representative Farr. It's the ability to communicate in today's society. At the workplace, the ability to express yourself is really considered to be a basic skill. And I think that's a real good observation, that that's something that probably has been added to the mix over the last, since we've been working on this thing over the last 20 years. This is something that has kind of increased in importance, the speaking skills.
Thank you.
Representative Tomei.
I'm finished. Thank you.
Oh, great. Thank you, Madam Chair. Could you talk some about parental support? I mean, that was such a strong issue that I can't remember what, you don't have a numbered slide, but not enough parental support. 83% felt like that was one of the obstacles. So what was the definition of parental support? Did you have any sense what they meant by that?
No,
go ahead.
I'll be so bold as to say that unless there's something that is part of any package that addresses parental support, that Oregonians would feel that it's an incomplete package. That's how important Oregonians consider what's going on in the House as being part of the solution. In every group we did, we would have a discussion about, it's just not what's going on in the schools, but it's what's going on when that child gets out of class every afternoon. It's what's going on in the evenings. It's what's going on the weekends. And there was an acknowledgement that it's very difficult for a lot of households, even a well-meaning parent, not having the time because he or she is holding down 3 part-time jobs or trying to take care of 3, 4, 5 children. And they recognize that. They recognize that being a problem, and there's a lot of empathy and if not sympathy, for the plight that a lot of parents find themselves in. But there also is a recognition of the strong link between what's going on in that household and the support the parent is giving the child and that child's success. And they really feel that, if anything, that is they feel that's an incredible variable. That's part of the answer here. And I think they're looking for a package, an approach that acknowledges that to be a problem and offers some answers.
If I may add to that, and it's, of course, not just parents, but grandparent involvement and a significant adult in a child's life. And I think the solutions are probably not all in the legislature. There are a lot of things that we're learning about that issue that may come back to the education community itself and to the foundations. I mean, there are tools we can provide parents, and we're looking at an array of different things. So it's probably a partnership. Maybe some things that could happen here and some things that can happen in the other places.
Thank you.
Madam Chairman, can I raise one question? I've heard two. Thank you, Madam Chairman. I won't be fine, will I?
I'll think about it.
I've heard two terms used here. One is involvement, and one is support. Can I divide those and take them apart, or are they interchangeable terms?
I think they're related. I think that in some cases people need support to be involved. Take the issue of parental involvement or support, and I see where it becomes a semantics issue. What we're talking about, and this is what we're hearing from Oregonians, that people want parents to be more involved in their child's education. More involved, okay? But for many Oregonians, that's very difficult, and they need the support to make that involvement possible. And that support, I mean, Chalkboard is looking at the form that support can take, but there's an acknowledgement that this is a big issue, and it needs to be looked at. And as Sue said, it's more than just parents. It's grandparents who are playing a big role in a lot of households in raising children. And it's other people in families as well. Does that explain it?
Let me follow that up.
Okay.
Yes, I did hear that very well. The involvement. I want to pursue that just a minute. Does involvement mean involved with an individual student's academic efforts, or does involvement mean top to bottom policy, procedure, procurement? What does involvement mean? The student or the whole process?
I think it depends on who you talk to, actually. It really does. I think where a lot of parents go, it depends on the age of the child. But the bottom line is that for the younger children, the lower grades, the K through 3 or so, we were hearing from parents that involvement is actually putting in volunteer time in the classes, interacting with their child and interacting with other children. And it was so cute. We did some focus groups with children, with kids, and we asked them about that. And we had some young kids in the focus groups, and they said, yeah, but by about third grade, I don't want my mom around, and I don't want to see my dad especially, and so, but there's where the shift would make, and the kids would tell you, and we had some heart-wrenching, I mean, just amazing stories about them not getting the support they wanted so badly from their parents, either because I remember this very bright high school student saying that, my mom wants to help me, I want to have her help me, but she doesn't know how. And she doesn't know the math, she doesn't know even how to read adequately to help me with stuff. It's that kind of stuff. So it changes from in the classroom. I think the constant is what's going on in the home, after school and in the evenings and on weekends. But what Sue and I also heard was this, and that is the better use of parents and non-parents' community volunteers in the administration of education. And there was a lot of commentary that we picked up on about schools not doing enough to take advantage of what people saw as a terrific resource out there, like the growing number of retirees that are out there that possibly could be mentors or tutors who could help with even playground monitoring and things like that. And we learned some practical problems, too, from the administrators and the schools people. You know, Adam, we'd love to do that kind of stuff, but, you know, there are lawsuits and screening, and we have to do all these background checks. I mean, it's not clear, but I wanted to be sure that you understood there's that element to it, an inadequate use of community resources out there as it relates to parents and non-parents and seniors.
Any other questions?
I might have one question.
Well, please, Representative.
Okay, we'll make sure. And I heard a lot of new ideas. Some of them are new. Some of them I think I know. But I hope you can give us, if you want to help us, give us some specific recommendations. You know.
Yeah.
Yeah, that improving education, and then people want this. But there's no specific recommendations. Mm-hmm. I hope you can help us and lead us to make a specific recommendations what needs to be done to make our current education system better for the children. That's what I'd like to get sometime later.
That's our goal, Representative Lim, is to bring you as specific as we can possibly be.
Now, I understand that you will be in a position to provide some feedback in early March,
right,
from your follow-up studies. Is
mm-hmm.
that correct?
Right.
I would like to invite you back at some point, and Mr. Keller will contact you, and we can have the advantage of that information. I think it would be very helpful.
Madam Chair, there is one thing you could help us with. We're starting our civic engagement process, and we really need Oregonians to plug in with Chalkboard, to come to the website, to download the materials, to send back the forms. Adam's firm is going to be tabulating all the feedback we get on these forms. We really need to hear from a cross-section of people. So anything you can do to encourage your constituents and partners and colleagues to get involved with Chalkboard, we would greatly appreciate.
And what is that website?
www.chalkboardproject.org. We also have a statewide toll-free phone number, which is 1-877-YOUR-K-12.
That's good.
Thank you very
Thank
much.
You.
I find it very helpful to have you represent the voice of Oregonians, and I think that will be helpful as we go forward in those deliberations that we make, and we look forward to hearing back again from you in March.
Great.
So
thank you so much.
Well, we do have some clearly disguised opportunities cloaked in unresolved problems, and I do think that hearing from the voice of Oregonians, as we move forward next week, we're going to hear from some of the institutional voices. And by the way, did you leave your money in the jar?
nice try.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
I believe okay is an acronym.
Unless you spell it okay, A-Y, I'm okay.
Yeah, there we go.
Okay. Be sure to come with your questions, even as you have those nights where you're reading that stacks of material and the 400-page document that Chalkboard probably would like to direct us to at their website. Come prepared, because we are going to start tearing things apart a little bit so that we can see how we can perhaps help put it back together. Not that that necessarily is what we will be doing, but we certainly hope that we'll make an impact there. If there are no other questions or comments, Representative.
thank you. I wanted to thank the foundations, and particularly the Meyer Memorial Trust and the other foundations that are throughout Oregon. I think that is really an example of the community coming together on this, and thanks to the Chalkboard Project. And, of course, Adam, you're just a hired gun, so but you're probably doing a lot of this pro bono, knowing you. So, and also, Madam Chair, thank you for bringing this to us. It was a great introduction.
Thank you. Well, if there is no other business or no other comments, then the Education Committee will be adjourned. Thank you.